Hi, this is ESPN's Dave Lamont, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome in to the Sports Objective. Busy night tonight as we have a lot of great things to talk about. And obviously football just around the corner. Pirates open up the season in, hard to believe, just a couple weeks. And of course, Labor Day weekend with NC State. But another great game on the schedule is Old Dominion, right, Bubba?
Yeah, Dave, and Pirates, as we know, play the first four games of the season at Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium in week two on September 10th. The Monarchs will be coming to town, and what a turnaround there for Ricky Ronnie's ball club. And right now to talk about that, very excited to welcome in a first-time guest, senior executive writer for odusports.com, as you see there on the screen, Harry Minium Jr. Harry, we appreciate your time this evening.
I appreciate you asking me. I've always had a place in my heart for East Carolina. My grandmother graduated from nursing school there, and I've got a lot of relatives who graduated from ECU. I've always liked ECU a lot.
Thank you, Harry. And we were talking about the great thing about the series. I love Old Dominion all the way back to the days of the CAA, as far as I know it was more of the basketball and Olympic sports. But this particular case, love the fact that now we have the close proximity. I know there's a lot of people from the 757 that are coming to East Carolina, or I guess vice versa. There's people, I'm sure, that are from Eastern North Carolina, especially in that northern part. When you look at like Elizabeth City, that area, I'm sure they go to Old Dominion. So it's a great less than a gas tank away. And certainly I know it's a great for I was really impressed, by the way. It may have been the 2013 game. I think that's when it was the Old Dominion fan base. There was a tailgate in the Belk parking lot for those that are Pirate Nation. It's across the street from the baseball field, and a huge turnout for ODU. So I was really impressed that day and the turnout by the fans. And I know it's a close drive, but still there's other schools, I'm sure, that would love to have the fan base Old Dominion has coming to a game. And then it's very great for Pirate Nation too, the people that live in the 757. It's kind of like a return game, if you will, for the folks that have to drive from the 757, a whole bunch of people we know that are driving down to Greenville. And then you got a guy, one of my best friends that is on the show, Bubba Rosenbaum, has to drive a few hours every single game. So anytime we have a chance to give him a game closer by, then it's great for him and all the fans from the Charlotte area.
There's no FBS team closer to Old Dominion than East Carolina. It's a 2 hour and 15 minute drive every time I drive it. It's an easy drive too. You compare it to Virginia and Virginia Tech. And I believe we're playing six out of the next 8 or 9 years. And I think that's wonderful because, you know, we've played in the past, but it's been so hit and miss. There hasn't really a rivalry really hasn't been built. And I think this could be a really good rivalry. Of course, Old Dominion needs to win a game, as, you know, they say, before it becomes a rivalry. But
now, Harry, let's, before we dive into this year specifically, let's talk about the Ricky Ronnie tenure or era there in Norfolk. When you take a look at Coach Ronnie, you know, he came from, I guess, Penn State, and then in 2020, the Monarchs didn't play football. And then, you know, last year, rough start, but man, did they finish strong before falling to Tulsa down in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. So just, you know, give us a snapshot glimpse at Ricky Ronnie's era there at Old Dominion.
Well, it, you know, wasn't just not playing in 2020. It was for those kids not being on campus. You know, we school was closed most of that year. And so, you know, they were doing, you know, our strength and conditioning people were working with them online. It was a terrible, terrible time for everyone during the pandemic. I mean, it's, everyone had a hard time, and it was really tough on those football players. And then they come back and they, you know, and they work out and just, I don't know that there are many people who could have kept that program together like Ricky did. I'll give you a brief summary of what Ricky is like. He is, at every press conference, at every interview I've ever had with him, he talks about either his sons or his wife or both. That's how important family is to him. And family is a big part of the football program. His family, the coaches' families, they have free reign of the football facility day and night. They can come in and say hi to their husbands. The kids run up and down the halls. The kids, the players, you know, they all know the kids. The players come to all the coaches' houses to eat. That, and yeah, that's the way James Franklin ran his program at Penn State. And Ricky and you know, has adopted that in a huge way. Blake Seiler, their defensive coordinator, he was a defensive coordinator at Kansas State and then was a defensive coach at West Virginia, took a huge pay cut to come here because he knew that Ricky was going to build a program the right way. And he has. He's done it by recruiting freshmen. He went to the transfer portal some last year, which everyone has to do. But I'll tell you how much his players think of him. They've not lost anyone in the transfer portal that they really, really wanted to keep. They've lost some kids. Well, you know, that weren't starting, that, you know, well, we could have used them, but they haven't lost any stars. You know, that's eventually going to happen. But in this time, I mean, that speaks highly for what he does. And just for the, you know, the culture that they've built there.
Harry, you bring up a great point. I can give two examples. One personally with me. I taught at the Eastern North Carolina School for the Deaf. I was a coach there for three sports, middle school and high school, social studies teacher. And basically what happened is they shut down the program, football program, for 1 year. And it took us 4 years to rebuild that program. I'm not saying it did that for you guys, but you look at UAB, for example. Bill Clark is another one that could have been a huge disaster for that program. And I know he had to step down, but what a great job that he did to keep that program going, even though it wasn't going, because that's the only reason why that program, I think, survived. If they had another coach that had come in, who knows, it's speculation. But and then
there would be no UAB football if it hadn't been for Bill Clark. Yeah. That guy, you know, he was a miracle worker. He's an amazing guy. And and he turned down some really big Power Five head coaching jobs to stay there. It's a shame that he has health issues and had to step down. He's really a good man.
Yeah, no doubt. But I'm glad that everything worked out. Bowl team last year, and you guys with Old Dominion coming to town. You were talking about that, about the rivalry. I do believe that I tell you what, another one with basketball. You know, you have football. The games have been close. Obviously, we know about your basketball program and then your baseball program, too. Look at your baseball program. So the big three, if you will, the three big sports that Old Dominion has, we have a lot of respect, not only because of the proximity with the school. People know each other. It may be house divided, where I'm sure there's some East Carolina Old Dominion grads living in the same house, husband and wives. And it's just, I think, you know, a lot of people may not see it like I do, but I think Old Dominion is great to have on the schedule. And we talk about the cost of travel. Well, when you look at Old Dominion, it's so close with the Olympic sports, and you look at basketball, football, baseball, there's a natural, it's not like they're two schools that have never played and we're trying to force something. There is some history there with the two schools, like you said.
And the hope I have is that some way, somewhere down the road, Old Dominion and East Carolina wind up in the same league. I mean, personally, if it was me and I was East Carolina's, I was the president of East Carolina, I'd look at the Sun Belt and say, hey, I'd like to be in a league with App State and Coastal Carolina. We'll have to see how college realignment works out, but it could happen. I hope it does. If not, I hope we just keep playing as often as we can.
And Bubba, you know, that's we all have sentimentally, I'm sorry, well, I just made this point and jump in with the next question. But for me personally, we all love the schools that are in the Sun Belt. I think the question becomes if somehow the Sun Belt can make more money for the TV deal, yeah, and or the American loses some of the money, which we think we will, then, I mean, every single team you can think about has a natural rivalry with East Carolina. So it makes perfect sense. Geography, the whole nine yards. It just comes down to the television money. So I think the Sun Belt's done a nice job with their conference expansion, including with you guys. And then certainly there's so many Marshall. We can start naming all the teams that East Carolina plays. And there's some that should be playing, like Coastal Carolina and East Carolina. I don't understand why they're not playing, you know, on a regular basis. But that's a whole other show, right, Bubba?
Yeah, since the topic of the transition to the Sun Belt came up, Harry, you know, some of those things that Dave was just referencing, if you would, you know, talk about that from Old Dominion's perspective, what Coach Ronnie as well as the administration there in Norfolk have had to say about that move, because, you know, just on the financial side alone, what they're going to be getting about 4 or 5 times as much as they were in Conference USA with the $2 million or so in the Sun Belt. Is that right?
Well, I know exactly how much they're going to get because I saw the figures, but I'm not allowed, you know, because I work for ODU, I'm not allowed to tell you. I'll just say we're going to be better off than we were in Conference USA for sure. And there are a couple of things about the Sun Belt that really stand out. I'll just mention them very quick, briefly. We joined Conference USA. We joined, you know, it's like any conference, you go to conference meetings, that's it. The Sun Belt, they sent their entire senior administrative crew to Old Dominion for a full day to meet with all of us. And so we had face-to-face discussions about, you know, how do we do games on television? You know, business people met. All the media people met. The football people met with Coach Ronnie. And then I go to football media day. And I think you guys have been to Conference USA media days, and it's okay. But the Sun Belt, it reminds me of the ACC media days. It's just, they're just at a higher level than Conference USA. They aspire to be better, and they carry themselves in a first-class way. And that's not disparaging Conference USA, which was a great home for ODU, and I think it was a great home for East Carolina for a long time. And I wish them the best. But it just, that's one of the reasons why we moved up. They are just first-class in every way.
While we're on the topic of the media days, Dave, I'm sure Harry probably saw the graphic on social media. Somebody had the Conference USA media day with the Sun Belt's media day side by side. And, you know, let's just say the Conference USA media day looked like it was in a very small room while the Sun Belt's media day looked like it was more a large ballroom.
I think I saw that, and I think everyone who saw it laughed. But I think that probably wasn't the best picture of Conference USA media day. I think they had a better facility than that. That may have been one of the breakout rooms. But yeah, I think everyone saw that here. Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just going to mention, Bubba, real quickly. One of the things that struck me as far as, you know, we're former members of the Conference USA. The biggest thing for, in addition to all the great teams and proximity for the Sun Belt, Fun Belt, is the TV deal. I mean, I'm going, okay, I love Facebook, but the games on Facebook, like I actually like streaming. The guys know I'm probably the biggest streaming nerd there is on the show. I stream everything. However, when it comes to Facebook, that's just not a place we think about going. ESPN Plus, we could take about Peacock, Amazon, Apple. There's a lot of them. I'm not anti-streaming. I was just disappointed for you guys, the people that were in Conference USA at the time, that the TV deal was not good. You really, for those of us that love like schools like yours, Harry, that's the only reason why we like searched for the games and found them and put them on. Otherwise, we would have never seen Old Dominion games like that were, you know, quote unquote, a national game that should have been on a ESPN Plus with your university.
Yeah, I remember I missed the Marshall ODU game in Huntington because it's my 50th high school reunion. Yes, do the math and you can figure out I'm an old guy. That game was on Facebook Live and I had a hard time finding it. I really did. I was actually in an emergency room. I cut my hand open and I had my phone looking for it. And it took me like 20 minutes to find it. And it said there are 6,000 other people online also watching this event. And, you know, 6,000, you know, a game on ESPN Plus is going to do 10 times that, you know. So it's Yeah, it's unfortunate. Conference USA schools, the schools deserve more exposure than they got under that TV contract. It's really a shame. And I hope they do better. I hope they can get a better deal.
So shifting over, taking a look at this ball club specifically, I know a lot returns from a team that won its last five regular season games a season ago that I referenced a few minutes ago. So just talk about the strong finish, one, and then everything this club has back.
Yeah, the finish was amazing. They were 1-6, and I'd written a column at the beginning of the season saying this. CBS Sports had ranked ODU 129 out of 130 of the FBS teams. And I said, that's ridiculous. This is a much better team. I've seen them practice, and they're much better. And even when they were 1-6, I knew they were much better. They lost to Buffalo by a point after outscoring them. I believe it was 24-0 in the second half. And they missed an extra point. There was a penalty and the kick, pushed the ball back 15 yards, and they missed an extra point. They lost a game at UTEP where a guy trapped the ball. It was ruled incomplete, and then they overruled it and said it was complete. And Conference USA later admitted, yep, it was a bad call. So I knew this team had potential. And then they got started with they beat Louisiana Tech on a Nick Rice. I think it was like a 35 field goal in the last second. And then you just knew they weren't going to lose. They just were determined to win. The team had been through so much together, with the pandemic, and there were some people on the team who lost close relatives in the pandemic, which weren't really publicized. There were some players on the team who lost family members to gun violence and other things. They had been through a lot, and they stuck together, and it was one of the most sensational things I've ever seen, seeing them win their last five games. They were a little shy of depth. They were young. They had talent. That team could have been 8-4, and if so, they would have, overperformed. This year they have 10 starters back on offense, 7 on defense. They've got a great place kicker from Georgia. They are 3 deep at quarterback. They have 2 starters back from last year, and then Brendan Clark, a transfer from Notre Dame, a former 4-star player at Manchester High School in Richmond. All their running backs are back. They've got tight end Zach Kuntz back on offense. He's 6'8". The guy is a monster. He goes up, and you see a crowd, and you see two arms just extend up and gets the ball. The offensive line, 6 guys are on the offensive line who started last season. There are about 10 or 11 guys who can play. We have 21 offensive linemen, which is more than we've ever had. Defense, there's just the defense last year was probably ODU's best since they were in FBS. And, virtually everyone is back. So they have a couple of players they've lost, but they just have so much more depth this season.
You mentioned those quarterbacks, talk about Hayden Wolf and then a guy, DJ Mack, who's from that region, but then went down to UCF and actually started a game against East Carolina at Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium, and now he's back home.
Yeah, DJ is he actually went to Norview High School, my high school, class of 71. He's a great kid, too. He started at Central Florida. He began his career there. He came in for, I forgot the name of the quarterback who was injured in the AAC championship game and led him to the championship. Then he got hurt, and so he transferred to ODU. And last year, I don't think he knew this. He hadn't had quite enough time to learn the system. He was still suffering a little bit from a knee injury he'd had. He looked like his confidence wasn't great. At times, he played well, and at times, he didn't. He's much better this season. He knows the offense very well, much more confident. He runs the offense really well. Hayden was a starter the last 7 games last season. Great passer. He was a highly rated 3-star quarterback out of Florida. that had a lot of great offers, including some Power Five offers. Has a strong arm. The only question mark has been, can he run? And so far in fall practice, he's run. And Brendan Clark he's also coming off ACL surgery. It showed in spring practice. He's much more confident. Man, the guy can throw. He can really throw. I'm going to paraphrase Ricky the other day. He said that, you know, the fact that all three are playing so well has made his job harder in picking a starter. But he knows that when they do pick a starter, they're not only going to have a good quarterback, they're going to have a good quarterback who's going to help them win games. So.
And Harry, I was just thinking about something else, is the fact, the one thing I've thought about Old Dominion, when you think about you were talking about, you went to high school in that area, the high schools there as far as talent, man, for athletes, not just football, but every sport, when you think about AI, there's a lot of great talent in the 757 and the Tidewater area, Hampton Roads. And if I'm a player and I want all my family to see me, you know, you got a guy like with your coach, it's like, man, you could literally, he could walk to some of the high, well, not walk, but you don't even have to have a gas tank. You get in the car 5-10 minutes away, maybe 20 minutes away. And if I'm a kid, not from there, you got a great city life there. You have the beach not too far away from Virginia Beach. A great school, great academics there. I mean, I could start naming off all, and I'm not an ODU guy, but I can see why people would go to ODU. And then if you're, like I said, if you can get some great recruiters in there, I'm sure he probably does, then not only the transfer portal, but man, you build that program, and a lot of those guys will stay home, Harry.
A lot of them have. Last year we were, and I'm sure I'm going to get the number wrong, but I think it was three of the top six players in the area. Anyway, three of the top players in the area, all recruited by Power Five schools, as rated by Larry Obama, the Virginian pilot. We got them, you know, and we're, you know, Bobby Wilder, the previous coach, most of his time was spent, you know, recruiting FCS. And when you're an FCS school, you're not going to recruit against Virginia Tech. And he didn't really try hard to recruit against FBS schools in the area, mainly because he didn't think he was going to get those kids. Well, Ricky's decided he's going to go after the best of the best, and he's gotten some of them. He's made recruiting in Virginia and North Carolina and Maryland all a priority, and D.C. Those are areas close to us, and we've done quite well in North Carolina. We got Dre Bly's son out of the Charlotte area. So, yeah, there's a lot of talent in the 757, and Ricky's done a fantastic job recruiting those kids.
Can you tell us future games coming up on the schedule off the top of your head that maybe Pirate fans will be interested in? Maybe there's some games that, you know, we would be interested in coming up and watching some games. You know, you talk about Virginia Tech coming up there. Are there other schools that Old Dominion, or maybe Old Dominion's going on the road to play that, you know, other football fans would love to see?
Well, the week after we play you, we're at Virginia. So that's a heck of a start, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And then we're home against Arkansas State, and then we're home against Liberty. That's going to be a good game. I think that's, you know, Liberty travels well. I think that game will sell out. And then we're at Coastal Carolina. We're at App State late in the year. We're at Georgia State. We've got Georgia Southern at home. We're at South Alabama. We have Marshall at home, and that's a big game. And I think I've got them all. I think that's all. Yeah, I think that's all our games. But the thing about the Virginia Tech series is ODU plays Virginia Tech each of the next 10 years, home and away. 5 games in Blacksburg and 5 in Norfolk. And next year we're bringing in Wake Forest. A few years down the road, we're bringing in Virginia. We're bringing in Army. You know, we've got a really good home schedule every year. There's some years when we're playing Virginia Tech and East Carolina at home, and those years we'll sell out of tickets through season ticket sales for sure.
No doubt about it, and we're looking forward to the game. Harry, as far as your work, tell everybody where they can find you. We appreciate you coming on tonight. Thanks again for your patience as I was doing a gig and trying to get here as fast as I could. I wasn't far away, but so close, but yet so far away, like the song says.
No problems whatsoever. It's easy to find my stuff. Go to odusports.com. It's easy. And, you know, it's funny, since I worked 39 years as the Virginian Pilot, and, you know, I meet some people and they say, where are you working now? So I hand them a card. It has odusports.com on it, so they'll remember to go there. And so you'll find the Max Arminium link there, which will link back to about 2 or 3 months of my columns. And if you go to the football page, you'll find all my football stuff there. So
Johnny asks again, Harry, who do you open up with this? That's going to be the Virginia Tech game there in Norfolk.
Virginia Tech game Friday, September 2nd, 7 p.m. ESPNU. I think it's the same night that App hosts North Carolina. So two big Sun Belt versus ACC games that night.
No doubt. Well, good luck to you guys against Virginia Tech. We obviously, hopefully one day we'll get them back on the schedule when they realize that we're as good as they are. Hopefully the AD will change his mind on that, but that's a whole nother show. But hopefully one of these days we'll be back.
Harry, I hope you guys go 11-1. So
that'll be great. we'll take it. We'll take it. Have a good one, man. Appreciate you so much. Enjoyed it. Love to have you back on soon.
Thank you very much, Dave and Pablo.
Harry. No problem. Enjoyed it. All right. Good night. All right. Appreciate Harry so much. In fact, we'll switch guests now. And a guy that – there he is. Hey, Rennie, how are you, man?
Dave, what's going on, my friend?
Thank you for rescheduling with us. We had a tough – 2 weeks ago, we had a tough night here at the house.
Yeah, I heard. I told Bubba, only for you guys. I rescheduled for you guys. It's no problem.
Thank you so much. And also want to bring in another great football player. There he is, ladies and gentlemen, former – linebacker under the Steve Logan era in the 1990s. We won a lot of games, a lot of bowl games, and it was all on his shoulders. Matt Semenza joins us. How are you?
Hey, what's up, guys? I don't know about the great football player part. Hey, speaking of football players, I gotta give Rennie props here. So I guess it was about maybe a month ago. Rennie had a highlight clip from his UMass days. And I gotta say, man, I was impressed. You were running through people. You were running over people. I liked it. That was a good tape.
So, Matt, you played when I did, right? The good era, right? The 90s, early 90s, mid-90s. So, you know, everyone – I'm 50 now. Everyone that I worked with in law enforcement, and even at ESPN, like, no one's ever seen me play, really. I mean, a very small percentage. And, it's not like you can put our name in – YouTube and look at highlights, because there was nothing digital back then. So you either have a VHS tape or you don't have anything. I mean, even my kids have never seen me play. So I said, you know what? Let me just do some old fashioned work, and I'll get the VHS tape. And I think Twitter lets you do like 2 minutes and 20 seconds, put together a few plays. And man, I tell you what, I got a lot of views, good reviews as well. So yeah, it was fun.
It was awesome. Cool. I'll tell you, Dave and Bubba, if you haven't seen it, you need to check it out. It's good stuff.
I definitely will. I tell you what, that I've been there a few times. I've been in the press box and had to go to the gentleman's room, and I walk back and I hear that familiar voice. I'm like, I wish I could just walk in there, but I don't want to get Rennie fired, and I don't want to be like forever banned from the press box. But it's so cool. And the fact that, you know, you're like, this guy is like all over the, you know, like all over Nation on ESPN, and then he's like on our show with us. It's a big deal to have you back on. We appreciate it, especially the fact that I don't know why my the guys know Rennie, but I'm so excited. My son actually played quarterback tonight.
Awesome.
But he's his fourth day in pads. He's never played football before, a 9-year-old, so very excited about that. Also, the local sports teams a lot better. The number, you know, COVID really killed our sports locally. So it's, I don't know if it's that, so my son playing, but pretty much every team from my son's age all the way up to the pros, things are looking really good for me. And hopefully I don't jinx it now that I say that, but I think that's why I'm more excited that we're a couple years removed from the crazy pandemic season that we hated so much.
Well, you know, I just came back from Charlotte, so we had our ESPN college football seminar for all the announcers, producers, directors, a lot of personnel there, and it's the first one we've had in 3 years. 2019 was the last one, so man, it was really good just to get back to normal, you know, see faces you haven't seen really in 3 years, because that's the 2 days a year that all the announcers, and we do breakout sessions, you know, the analysts, play-by-play, sideline. That's the one time a year, 2 days that we can see each other and bounce ideas off each other, because obviously everyone's traveling with their crews and you don't see each other. And so, yeah, it felt really, really good. And really, to a person, everyone said the same thing. And so I think we're finally over the hump, guys. I'm not worried about jinxing. And I think we're in a good place. And the other thing too, it's like the first couple times I've flown and I didn't have to wear a mask. So that felt really good as well. So I think we're in a good place.
No doubt. And Matt and Rennie, when I saw just before we came on, by the way, did you guys see that, speaking of analysts, that Dan Mullen is going to be on ESPN? I thought that was
cool. That right? Okay.
Well, I knew because I was with him the last 2 days.
Okay. pretty cool. So I thought, and Matt's wife, if you don't remember, Rennie is a Florida graduate, but I thought he got a raw deal. I thought he got a raw deal in Florida. It's kind of like a politician. Once you get in that, I don't know if it's the doghouse or whatever you want to call it, it's like he could do nothing right. You can talk about recruiting, but I still, and no offense, Chrissy, if you're listening, Chrissy, but I just think what it is now is that I really believe that people are living in an era that doesn't exist. And what I mean by that for Florida fans is, yes, they should have the expectations to be great, but the problem is that all the teams, you look at Kentucky is better now. You look at Tennessee is better now. Georgia won the national championship. It's not like Florida and everybody else like it used to be when they were winning. It just seems like that every team now, maybe Vanderbilt in the SEC is the only, I don't know, you would say, I hate to say give me game, but there's not games out there like they used to be they were good teams. I'm not knocking Florida back then. I'm just thinking that all of a sudden now you can go 6-6 and you have a great team. And I don't think they're taking that into consideration.
Yeah. And you know, like Dan Mullen, I mean, the job he did at Mississippi State was incredible. One of the great coaching jobs in recent memory. He was phenomenal what he did there. And he went to Florida. I think he got off to a good start and then things just kind of went downhill for him. And I actually, you know, now that you mentioned it, I think TV might be a great thing for him to get away from coaching for a few years, kind of clear your head, get, you know, step away from the game a little bit, step away from the team, and maybe he goes back to it in a few years. The man can coach. I mean, he was tremendous at Mississippi State.
Hey, Rennie, with what do you think about the what you should do is like analyst and then rehab with Saban? What do you think?
Well, I mean, that seems like everyone that goes there as an analyst or an assistant coach under Saban goes on to become a head coach again. So you never know. I think, Dan, I had a really good conversation with him. I got two nights ago or a night ago, I lost nights and my flight got delayed, as everyone does now in the country. So I got home early this morning. But good conversation with him. I think he's in a real good place. He's going to do studio work for us. He's going to be great. Just listening to him. And just to kind of echo what you guys said, too, I mean, you know, once things start going slanting the wrong way and then you got the media and it's just, you know, it's just you can't stop it. But, yeah, I think not just for Dan Mullen, a lot of those coaches. I mean, the coaching world, and, yeah, it's easy to sit back and say, well, they make a ton of money. They sign up for it. Okay, we get that. They do. They've also started out really low and worked their way up to that. But it gets really stressful now with everything with transfer portal and NIL and just, you know, the pressure – as you said, Dave, that the programs, the expectations that these guys have, man, it's pretty tough. And then, you know, a lot of people don't talk about this, but Dan Mullen did, is especially in a school like Florida, or in, you mentioned in Alabama, you know, their support staff, their assistant coaches on down, it's literally like 70 people. It really is. So when the head coach goes, everybody goes. Because the head coach brings in his own people, and he was mentioning how there's a lot of people that work for him that are unemployed right now. And that's tough for a coach, too, because obviously the coach gets bought out or whatever, and, you know, and he wants to try to take care of those people. So there's a lot of pressure, a lot of A lot goes on with those head coaches, but I do agree with you. I think a couple of years in a year or a couple of years in TV will do wonders for Dan for sure.
And how do you feel about what Napier? Do you, because it's not that I don't think Napier is a good coach. It's not that. It's just that I'm like, okay, Dan Mullen was a good coach, and is it kind of like that thing? It's kind of like, I don't know. I hate to say that because again, I think a lot of Madden. I don't want Chrissy mad at me, but it just feels like that all these coaches is where they go and where their coaching career dies. I mean, you're like Napier has got it made there in Louisiana. You go to UFF, and I'm not blaming him for going to UFF. I think they've got a great school, you know, with the I love Gainesville. I think it's a great place, kind of like Greenville. It's a great college town. My gosh, the swamp is awesome. I drove by it. I haven't been inside of it. I haven't been to a game, but it was very impressive. So I understand it's kind of like Bright Lights, Big City, but are you better off, like the cliche, being a big fish in a small pond?
Go ahead, Matt. Yeah,
I mean, you know, I could just say, like, you know, Gainesville can be, for a southern town, a college town, they can be pretty ruthless on coaches. They really can. And they have had a bad stretch here, but you know, certainly like from Napier's perspective, I want to say his record coming into Gainesville, coming into Florida, is 45-10 as a head coach. He has a fantastic track record. You know, the question is, can he recruit at the level to be at the top of the SEC? Because Florida fans just aren't going to settle for anything less. You're either at the top of the SEC, or you might as well be in last place, because they're not going to settle for mediocrity. So those are just my thoughts on it. I mean, it's a tough job, but he has been, you know, ready. I mean, he's been, I know you followed him very closely. Mm-hmm. This guy has a great record.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Matt. So I'm a big Billy Napier fan. I've done, you know, probably 3 or 4 Louisiana games the last couple of years. So I've had good conversations with him. He's a really good offensive mind. But you hit on it, Matt. I don't care where you go. You better recruit, because at the end of the day, it's about the Jimmy and Joes, not the X's and O's. I mean, it just is. So to answer Dave's question too, I mean, there comes a point in your career as a coach. Listen, every coach, every player for that matter, we all have egos, right? In a good way. Some probably have them in a bad way. So you eventually have to take that step. So you get a chance to go to the SEC or in the Sun Belt, you're very successful. Go to Gainesville, you take that shot, right? And so I agree with him going for that position. Now you got to recruit the players. And like I try to tell people, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the Georgias, even the Texas A&Ms, what happens in the recruiting world is, you know, they do such a good job recruiting. And, you know, you look at all the different recruiting databases, and there's a ton of them out there, and 5 stars, 4 stars. And let's just use in Alabama. Let's say Alabama, out of their class, let's say they recruit 25. You know, let's say that they have something like 17 5 stars, 8 4 stars, whatever it is, right? They all got stars, right? They have the luxury, because they've recruited so many, they can miss on some of those guys. And inevitably, you are going to miss in recruiting, because it's not an exact science. But when you're a group of five or a lower tier Power Five team, and you only get a handful of those guys, you can't miss on them, because then you're done. So Florida needs to get back to that point where they're getting those top 10 recruiting classes, where if you miss on a couple guys and inevitably they go in the transfer portal and they leave you, it ain't going to hurt you. So we'll see if he gets back. Because the other thing in the SEC, you need depth, right? You need depth. It's just not your starting 22. You need depth to go with that. So we'll see. I am really, really intrigued what Florida does this year, right? But, I mean, things are driven by quarterbacks. We know that. So Anthony Richardson, we'll see. Billy Napier's quarterbacks will run a bunch. Now, Richardson – AR, he's very athletic, you know, but he's a big guy. He's got a rocket for an arm. So it'll be interesting to see that offense in Gainesville this year.
No doubt about it. But just thinking about Napier, one of the things, I'm a huge Napier fan. I think he's a great coach. One of the things I heard, guys, is that maybe both of y'all know better than I do, that at one time, I heard things are changing now, but at one time, the facilities for Florida were not what they should be. That I've heard in the last few years, they're starting to finally, you know, like pay it to close attention to that. We know we're in an arms race, but that's one of the reasons I heard that coaches are having a hard time recruiting is that, again, we're living in the mindset of the 90s or the days of Urban Meyer. And I'm not hating on Florida. I'm just saying that was another thing that I heard, that from the outside looking in, the facilities were behind, and hopefully they can catch up sooner than later.
I'm pretty sure they just rolled out, and Rennie, you may have seen this, a brand new all football facility. It actually, Dave, as a matter of fact, in the last few days, if I saw this correctly on the news, it's supposed to be, you know, at the level of the top of the SEC, just a phenomenal facility. So I'm not sure about that, but it's from that standpoint, I mean, apparently whatever was going on there, they've now righted the ship. So hopefully it's in a better place for them.
No, you're right. I believe it was $100 million indoor facility, which they didn't have, indoor practice facility, new locker rooms. And so that stuff, just kind of going back to Dan Mullen, that stuff that was being built, you know, under Dan Mullen, but he doesn't get to see the fruits of it because he's gone. But they need that. How about this, guys? Because I know we talk, you know, I live here in Orlando where UCF is. You know, just up to like 3-4 years ago, UCF was the only school in Florida that had an indoor practice facility. And of course, we're, you know, Orlando, Central Florida, we're in Lightning Alley, so you need it. But none of them had it. Since then, Florida State built one. Now we just talked about Florida. And I know Miami's going to get some new stuff going on down there. And even USF's now upgrading as well. So, but you need all that stuff for recruiting. You just do. Because it's really hard. I think Dave said it. You know, you live on the past and how good you were. But the recruits come in and they're like, oh, this is pretty good. But then you go to an Alabama or an Ohio State or a Georgia that has it all, right? That's 5-star. And you're like, man, it really turns your head. So you need that stuff to keep up with it.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I'll tell you guys, since we brought up Florida, sorry, Dave, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Since we brought up Florida, I'm looking at week one. I started looking at the matchups, starting to get fired up.
That's a huge game.
It is, Randy. I mean, I love that matchup. I love Utah coming in. They're coming off that Rose Bowl performance where they almost knocked off Ohio State. I saw they're ranked number 4 and number 7 in some publications, but that's a very good team. Going into the Swamp, the first week of the season, and I really think that that's going to come down to, you know, maybe a one possession game late. So that's a good one.
Utah is definitely a sleeper team to make the college football playoff. They have the schedule in front of them to do it. They, as you said, Matt, they return a lot of players, their starting quarterback. So for them, if they can come across country, go to Gainesville, it's going to be hostile, national television crowd, a lot of eyeballs on that game. If they can come out of there with a win, that sets them up for the season, you know. So, you know, you can't win them all until you win the first one, right? So that should be fascinating. And then on the flip side, you know, I think people are like curious what's going to go on with Florida and Billy Napier, and what a statement it would be for him, right? His, to start his era, to knock off a top-ranked Utah team that's getting a lot of love, that are people are saying this is a team that can make the college football playoffs. So if you look at the slate, and because, you know, I was looking at the ESPN slate that the first weekend, ridiculously great games to start the season. So I'm excited.
I know, of course, you're going to be talking about one of those games, will be NC State, East Carolina. And Rennie, I talked yesterday to a man who, from the jump, as the kids say, believed in Mike Houston. Makes a nice segue, because you were one of the only national. We talked to Phil Still yesterday. Phil Still and Rennie are the only two that I can remember. Not that people don't believe in Mike Houston, but nationally, you guys were on the bandwagon extremely early. You were like two of the guys sitting down first.
Well, and I, you know, as watching what he did at JMU when they were FCS, I don't know what year it was, Dave, but I did. You'll probably know. So JMU came up to Greenville and played ECU. I think it was 2015, 2016. Do you remember 17, that? 17. Was it 17?
Yeah, 17.
And they dominated ECU, and they dominated them up front. And I want to say maybe – I think JMU definitely went to the national championship that year in the FCS. I'm not sure if they won it, but they definitely yeah. – it might have been the year they won it.
Yeah, they won it the previous year, and then they were runner-up that year. I think they got beat by North Dakota State in the championship.
But they dominated that game in the trenches on both sides of the football. And I'm just sitting back there saying – and I knew Mike Houston could coach. So I knew when he – came to ECU, he has roots in Carolina. He was going to be able to recruit. He was going to recruit to what he does. And again, I know it's cliche. We say it all the time, but I know you guys know this. He had to change the culture to what he wanted and what he believed they needed. And he did that. So year three, he gets them to a bowl game. Now, you guys kind of, didn't get it. The kids didn't get to participate in that bowl game, which I actually think for this year, is good for them because it's going to put a chip on their shoulder. They made it there and they just kind of didn't get a chance to play. So that just gives them a little more added ammunition. And then to open up against an NC State, who again is a very good team, who a lot of people say could win the ACC. National audience, again, a great opportunity for ECU to really, take a notch up nationally.
Yeah, now Reenie, not to go too far down that dreadful past with that 2017 JMU game, but good grief, like you said, I think it finished 34-14. That included the touchdown for the Pirates in the final minute of the game. It was nowhere near that close, and they were just pounding us in the trenches. And I made the comment to my dad fairly early on in that game before, I think it was 7-7 at halftime and then, or 7-0 perhaps. And it, they just blew our doors off in the second half. And I made the comment to my dad. I said, hey, I said, you look at them in the trenches compared to us, and they look like the FBS program. We look like the FCS program.
We were.
and my dad kind of tried to downplay it. And I said, I don't like it. I'm not being negative. I said, it's just a fact. I said, I know what I see.
Yeah. What had happened is with, and again, we've talked about Scotty Moe at Ignatium over the last 4.5 years. But basically, if you went to practice, Matt would have, and Bubba and you, Rennie, being all three of you are former players, and I've coached football. It was embarrassing to have a Division I practice where you don't have good on good hitting. And I'm not talking about the day before the game. We're talking about early on in the day, a week. And it's like more like – I was telling the guys it was so surreal. It was more like a pro practice and not a college practice. And it says a lot about Mo's background because he had all that with like the Steelers and with – I know he's since gone on to like – the Colts and all, but he literally was running a pro practice and scared for the guys to hit when the reality is that's what killed us in games like James Madison. That was the physicality was just not there.
So it's a pet peeve of mine. I'm sure Matt will agree with me. So when I played in the early 90s training camp, we hit a ton, right? Now I get it for health and safety reasons. You need to pick and choose and you need to change it up. But if you – it's principle of specificity. If you don't practice what you have to do in the game, you are not going to be good at it. So if you watch the NFL the first couple of weeks, the fundamentals are horrible, missed tackles everywhere. And so I think it's fascinating. I don't know if you guys watch Hard Knocks. So I watched episode 1. Dan Campbell, I was like, oh, my God. They were tackling like crazy. And and he talks to his players and he says, I could see your guys because they're not accustomed to that in the NFL. But he just said, listen, I will take care of you, but we have to practice this to be good. And another case in point is if you remember the COVID year, when Navy got to open up on national television and they hadn't practiced tackling at all. And they were just getting their doors blown off. And Ken Niumatalolo was like, that's on me because we literally did not hit. So and so you have to practice that stuff. So that's another thing today with today's coaches is you got to have that toughness. You got to be able to practice good on good live. But you got to know when to back it off, when to rest them. There's a fine line between it. And I think the good coaches figure that out.
I couldn't agree more, Rennie. Just like you mentioned, I mean, you got it 100%. And like, it's interesting when you listen to Mike Houston, his interview, as a matter of fact, just yesterday, I want to say, maybe it was Tuesday. One of the things he talked a lot about, he was talking about how great of a practice they had. And he talked about inside drill. And it's from the sound of it, every Tuesday and Wednesday, they go good on good, mm-hmm. inside drill, just straight up hard knocks football in the trenches. And, you know, he actually said that's his favorite drill because there's no hiding. You know, there's no hiding in inside drill. You're going to get exposed quick. So those are the type of things he works on in practice. And physicality can be taught. And in this case, he's somebody that, and I say this all the time, but he took the culture here from more of a finesse,
right.
sort of spread up-tempo attack to, we're going to try to pound you in between the trenches and we're going to try to win up front. And my hope, and I know all the guys' hope, is that now it's year four and this is the year it kind of all comes together and we start pounding people up front.
Yeah, and you guys know this. And calling games each and every week, and you see teams run the spread and they throw it all around, you still have to be physical and win at the line of scrimmage. And I'll always go back to Alabama. Alabama was always known for what? Dominant defense, winning the line of scrimmage, running the ball, right? And then Nick Saban kind of sat back and saw the landscape was changing, right? In that rules were there to favor the offense and spread it out. And all of a sudden these teams started scoring a ton of points. And Nick Saban is a great enough coach where he's like, okay, I'm going to start doing that on offense too. I'm going to get these receivers. But at the end of the day, they're still physical at the line of scrimmage. I say this in my broadcast all the time, and people probably turn their head kind of like a confused dog and they don't know why, but it's so true. And I've had a couple offensive coordinators say this to me over the last 20 or 30 years. In today's world, you throw the ball to score points, but you run the ball to win games. Okay, and so what that means is, yeah, you're going to have to score with a lot of these teams, but when the time when it has to be done, you need to run the ball to secure the game, run out the clock, get first downs, and secure the win. And to me, you have to do both of them. Yeah, you'll have that anomaly every once in a while. A team that's just so good at throwing the ball and they do their little dink and dunks, but even their dink and dunks, really, that is just an extension of the run game. And just to get back to what Matt said too, so inside run, if anyone's watching or listening now, it's live football. It's basically tight end to tackle. There's no outside linebackers, inside linebackers, and it's just all inside run plays. And I loved it as a running back too, because there's no hiding for the running back. You are going into the line of scrimmage. You are going to get hit by a linebacker unless your guard gets off and gets a great block. And it teaches physicality for running backs. And I love that too, because even if you're a flashy, so even if you're a Keaton Mitchell that's got, you know, that stutter step and it's flashy, it teaches you to run behind your pads and get physical that first 5 yards. So I love that inside run for running backs as well.
Yeah, guys, forgive me if we've already discussed this. I had to step away for a few minutes earlier, but yeah. Have we discussed AAC Media Day yet? All right, so obviously, Rini, a few weeks ago, you were down in Texas for the AAC Media Day on ESPN+. So just talk about some of your major takeaways. The media poll or coaches poll came out. I was a little surprised that the Pirates were sixth. I thought it would probably be fourth or fifth. But what were some of your big takeaways from the AAC Media Day?
Well, I mean, first, I agree with the media. I pick Houston to win the conference as well. Now, the interesting thing was, since he got more first-place votes, but when they do the total point total, Houston was 1 point above them. And so Dana Holgorsen did not want to hear that at all. He's like, Cincinnati, they went to the CFP, and, you know, it should be them, it's not us. But then – in the conversations and the questions with the media, he said something which to me is one of the biggest reasons why I picked them to win it. He said the average age of his starters is 22 years old. Okay. There's a ton of experience on that team. And I think Clayton Dell, right? Or Clayton Tune, excuse me. Clayton Tune, Nathan Dell, Tank Dell is wide receivers. Phenomenal. They got all kinds of tools. Yeah. Their running back hurt their knee, but I think they'll be able to plug someone in there. So Houston was my favorite. The other thing, and I think you guys know this, of the 11 schools in the American, they all return their starting quarterback, but one. That one is Cincinnati, right? Which is interesting. Now, in saying that, I called Ben Bryan at Eastern Michigan a couple times. He's a dynamic quarterback. I did a Maction game last year at Toledo, and it was Maction. It was what you thought. It was like a 55-48 game, and Ben Bryan was phenomenal. He threw for like 370 and 3 and 4 touchdowns, so he's everything. But it's amazing in today's world that, you know, Ben Bryant starts his career at Cincinnati, gets to a point after a couple of years, and he knows it's Desmond Ritter's show, and he's not going to beat out Desmond Ritter. I don't know if people know this. The Cincinnati coaching staff actually went to Eastern Michigan and said to them, hey, he's too good of a player to be a backup. He needs to start. I think that tells you a lot about Luke Fickell. I know there's some, you know, no love lost between ECU and Cincinnati, but for a coaching staff to do that and just say, because at the end of the day, you know, you want your backup to be the best quarterback you can, but they knew he deserved to be a starter, goes to Eastern Michigan, does what he does, and now Ritter leaves, and because of the crazy world we live in college free agency, forget transfer portal, it's college free agency with no rules. He's able to come back and end his career at Cincinnati. So I fully believe I don't know if they named it, but I would be shocked if he's not named the starter. But with that said, guys, they still had, I think they had nine, you guys might want to correct me, I think they had 9 players drafted, I think 11 total went to the NFL. It was a ridiculous number, right? So they lost a lot.
Yeah.
They lost a lot. But Luke Fickell's a good recruiter, but we'll see if those second string guys that will step up and start now can do what they did last year. So it'll be interesting where they are. And to answer your question, Bubba, back there, yeah, I'm looking at the poll too. I have it underneath me. I'm a little surprised East Carolina 6 because Memphis has questions to answer, right? We'll see what they do. SMU's the other one, Tanner Mordecai. They bring a ton of talent in. I think the voters left them up there because Rhett Lashley steps back in. He's got familiarity with the program. He's a great offensive coordinator. But, yeah, I would have – because if they had East Carolina 6, Memphis 5, I probably would have flip-flopped them and at least had East Carolina 5. But they were really bunched up. I mean, if you look 4 to 7, they were pretty bunched up in the points. I mean, 1, 2, and 3, Houston, Cincinnati, UCF. We're kind of extended away from the other teams.
By the way, I have no love lost for Luke Fickell. So
I know. Well, that's why I said what I did. So,
and coaches and fans and players don't forget and remember, Luke, what comes up, what goes up must come down.
Guys, that's why college football is so great. I that's why I love it. The passion, right? The pride, the pageantry, the passion. I don't care what anyone says. Yes, you know, NFL's king with the numbers. The NFL does the fan base of the NFL doesn't have the passion college fan bases does. It just doesn't. You know, and Marty Smith said something yesterday, guys. We do so at the seminar, we do breakouts, and then we have panel discussions, and they'll put some of the bigger personalities up on stage in front of everyone, and they'll do some panel discussions. And Marty Smith said something that I agree with him wholeheartedly because everyone's head's kind of spinning, right? They don't know what's happening in college football in the direction. And he said, listen, the college football I grew up with is no longer. It's gone. And we can relate to that because the college football I played, Bubba, Matt played, those days are gone, right? But college football is different, but it doesn't mean we love it any less. We still love it. It's just different, right? And with NIL and transfer portal and what looks like to be mega conferences eventually, you know, it's just different, but we don't love it any less. So, and we're excited.
Well, the point I'll make is that we've talked about Luke Fickell and Mike Houston. Mike Houston, you were talking about that game, right? So it was 34-14. Even Mike Houston said they could have scored a lot more points, and he was being a gentleman to us that day. And I think because he knew there might be a chance, hey, wait a minute, I might be able to coach there someday. And you take Luke Fickell, I'm sorry. But he doesn't care about those things, about relationships. He doesn't, all of us want to win, But when it comes to a point when you do a fake field goal and you're way up, I'm sorry, I have no respect for you. Well,
that fake punt in Coach Fickell's defense, I honestly didn't have a problem with it. And the reason why is because as soon as I saw how East Carolina's punt return team aligned, I said, Cincinnati's going to fake this. I said, the guy will run for 20 or 25 yards and not get touched. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, and you got to remember, guys, most good special team coaches, special team programs, they practice fakes all year long. And the different players, depending on what that return team does, there's an automatic cue where the coach doesn't even have to call it. If they see a certain look, they're going to fake it. And listen, the kids don't care what the score is. You know that. You get a chance to run the ball or throw a pass, they're going to do it. But, Dave, I love your passion, man. I love it. That's what builds rivalries. That's what makes conference play so good. And it excites me.
Hey, Luke, all I will say is don't complain. Don't complain when you have a down year and our team has turned around. Don't complain if the score has run up on you. Turnabout is fair play. I'm just saying. But, you know, like, for example, East Carolina with North Carolina in 2014, roughing McNeil, the fourth quarter, I think we'd scored 63 and we put one touchdown, but we could have scored a lot more on Larry Fedora's defense that day. And even though it's North Carolina, and even though it's that, I know it's, everybody says 70 points, but it could have been a lot more than 70 against that defense. In fact, that's the most that Carolina's ever given up in a football game.
Listen, fellas, if I was coaching that game, I would have went for 100. I would have tried to rub salt into the wound. I'm not going to lie to you. I was going for 100. I was a little disappointed that Ruff took his foot off the gas.
It was like 9 or 10 minutes left of the fourth quarter, and he called off the dogs. It was way early in the fourth quarter.
You know, speaking of North Carolina, I heard your previous guest a little bit before I came on. North Carolina plays two tough Sun Belt teams to start the season. They go and on the road. Mm-hmm. They go to Boone and play App State. They go to Atlanta and play Georgia State, too, who's coming off a good year. And so I love these matchups now. Like you guys, I'm a big Sun Belt fan as well, along with the American. So I'm excited for these group of five teams to get a shot at some of the quote unquote big boys.
Hey, Rennie, two games I wanted to throw at you really quick just to get your take on that I think are really interesting. Ohio State, Notre Dame, and then Oregon against Georgia. Just wanted to get your quick thoughts there.
So a lot of people think Notre Dame's ranked too high, right? Now the preseason rankings, guys, it is what it is. It makes for a great matchup in that first game. I'm kind of like everyone else. I kind of think it's Alabama, Ohio State, and everyone else. I think Georgia's there at three and then everybody else. So, you know, it's really hard to, man, you know this. What team are you going to get to show up week one, right? Because you don't really know. Because we know in football, the biggest improvement any team makes is from week one to week two. So it'll be interesting. I think Ohio State has made a lot of tweaks with their defense. I think their defense coming into the season was I don't want to say an issue because I don't think it is, but I think it the weaker part. So I think they're going to be okay with that one. I'm interesting to see what Notre Dame does. I'm a big Coach Freeman fan. I think that was a great hire for them to keep him there. He's a superstar coach, but I like Ohio State in that one. And then Oregon, Georgia. Oregon's interesting, right? Because they're kind of the girl that didn't get the date, right? They got left behind because they wanted to, you know, obviously they wanted to go along with USC and UCLA, and they still may. That's not over yet. You know, there's going to be more in the next couple of years. But that kind of gives them a little chip on the shoulder. But you know, we'll see what they do. I think Georgia, although they had a ton of players drafted, well, a ton of top-notch players drafted, Kirby Smart has recruited really well there. So I like Georgia in that game too. So it'll be interesting.
Bo Nix, right? Bo Nix.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. So Bo Nix now, a quarterback up there. Guys, the hardest – when I did the American Athletic Conference media days, it's funny you brought up Phil Steele. The hardest thing for me doing those media days was trying to figure out who the hell was playing where and where they played last year. Because you can look at all the magazines you want, but even poor Phil Steele, and I'm sure he told you this, you know, he gets ahead because he puts so much information in his magazine. he's so ahead in his that he misses. There's a ton of transfers in there that he doesn't have. And how can you? There's no – if anybody wants a certain date, time limit of when you can transfer, it's him. So he can – you know, he doesn't have to put updates out to his magazine. But that was the hardest thing. I mean, you look at a school talking about media day. So I gave my – I said I was bullish on ECU again. Which I always am. My surprise team of the year, though, for the American, and I put it on record, and I said, let's play. We'll play it next year if you guys hire me back, is USF. It's South Florida, guys. I know you're going to think I'm crazy. I think they won two last year. I think they were 2-10. I don't think they won three. I know they only won. Well, I have it in front of me. Let me see what they were last year. They were 2-10, 1-7 in conference, and I think they were the exact same thing in Jeff Scott's first couple of years. So I think they've only won a handful of games in 3 years. He's got two new coordinators, and Bob Shoop's his defensive coordinator. I know Bob Shoop. He's a long-time defensive coordinator. He's been a defensive coordinator at multiple Power 5 programs, Vanderbilt, Penn State, Mississippi State, okay? He actually, as a protege, he came up under Donnie Brown, who's the head coach at UMass, who was a defensive guru, who did his stuff at Michigan. And he brings in Travis Trickett as his offensive coordinator, who was at West Virginia. So Jeff Scott brings in two new coordinators. And you want to talk about working the transfer portal, guys? I think he's got about 25 or 26 Power 5 players that he brought in to USF on that transfer portal. A majority of them, a lot of new defensive linemen, right? You got to win up front. And, oh, by the way, his quarterback is a guy by the name of Gary Bohannon, who was the starter at Baylor. And if you haven't seen Gary Bohannon, just go ahead and put him in YouTube or whatever and watch some highlights for him, because the kid is phenomenal. So they can get a quarterback like Gary Bohannon. It's going to be night and day. Now, listen, it's easy to say we took all these players in a transfer portal. They still have to mesh, right? And they still have to play. But it was funny because if you're into gambling, that sort of thing, and you look at the Vegas line, Vegas knows they brought in a lot of new players. So they put their over-under for wins at 4.5, right? But I'm over on that. I picked them to win 5 or 6, possibly 6 games to get to a bowl game. And if you look at their schedule, it's one of the harder American schedules. But I just think that personnel is such where – they're going to surprise a lot of people. They're going to knock somebody off that they weren't expected to this year. So that's my surprise team in the American. We'll see if they make me look like a genius or not.
Now, Reaney, very quickly, going back to what you were saying as far as Phil Steele, and you may be aware of this, but due to the transfer portal and the impact it's had on his product, his online preview, he updates it every so often now, so those things do not go by the wayside, and that the purchaser of his online magazine has that information throughout the season.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. I noticed that because someone had asked him that, so I said, okay, he's updating online. But man, what a headache for them though to do it. But I mean, it keeps you in tune. But yeah, I'm with you. Something needs to be done. We actually talked about this at the seminar too. And I think the easiest thing they can do is just give a date and time, right, that you can transfer through. So everybody knows, the coaches know, the teammates know. But the problem is, who's our governing body going to be, right? We see what's happening, the NCAA, and, that's a headache right now. And the other thing is, guys, there's still thousands upon thousands of players in the portal. Nowhere to go. No scholarships. So that's the other thing, too. You know, you're going to get me going on this, too, because, you know, again, I'm an old school guy. I know Matt will agree with me here. These players in high school, it's a different world they live in. I always say this. Listen, in 1989, when I was in high school, if my picture was in the paper, if my name was in the paper on Saturday evening, if it was a Friday night game or Sunday, that was a big deal. Now these kids are on national TV, and listen, I'm going to call a national high school game week zero. These kids are on national TV. They're on all these recruiting sites. They're 5-star, 4-star, and they're good in high school, right? But when they get to their schools, all of a sudden they're like, holy crap, everybody's really good, right?
Yep.
And they find themselves third string defensive end, and they don't know what to do. They don't know how to fight to move up the depth chart. So inevitably what happens? their parents, their handlers, whoever, say, oh, the coach is wrong. You're good. They go to the transfer portal. It works out for some of them, but a lot of them sit in there. These kids need to learn how to fight and work hard. And then guess what? Maybe you might sit a year or two, but you're going to learn. You're going to get better. You know, and then, of course, Mac Jones was kind of the poster child of that. You know, and I get it with quarterbacks, right? We talked about Ben Bryant. I get it with quarterbacks. You want to play, but I just think, you know, and in most positions, these players don't know how to deal with adversity when they get to these schools that are loaded with talent.
You make a great point. You got a guy like Matt Semenza, like, you know, like if you, when you have a lot of talent too, then you're going to create that competition week after week, practice after practice. I think a lot of it, Rennie, society wise, and I won't get that, but I just really feel like that it's, I was thinking about that today, entitlement. You know, I think that you were being generous, you've been nice. Maybe I can be the mean one. It's like entitlement. You know, it's like the sports center where we live in. The kids don't understand that Kobe Bryant, if he scores 100 points, there's a reason why that guy was scoring a lot of points, because he was a gym rat. He was like a Jordan. Yes. First one in, last one to leave. You want to talk about basketball, you could talk about football. And one of the coaches for my son last night said for Alex that he was hungry. And I thought about that for today's players. How many – and I'm not comparing that to my son. It's not fair to my son or the other players, but I just thought about how many players today in college, for example, are really hungry. Just that the point that you make, Rennie, and it was no accident why you were thinking like that and what I'm thinking, but it's just like there's nobody hungry right now. There's nobody willing to roll up their sleeves and say, okay, like my son, he's never played football before. He's okay with whatever happens because he's never played. He's getting in there. And if you have to fight, not like fight, meaning like fist fight, but like the drive and the ambition. And that's the thing that's missing for me. I don't know if it's COVID where people have gotten lazy and say, okay, all this stuff is going to be handed to us. But I just feel like that very thing of the million 4 days and 3 days and all that stuff you guys used to have to do back under Logan. You know, I don't have a problem with going back to that. I really don't.
Yeah, I think it's a microcosm of our society. I mean, we live in an instant gratification society now. And when things don't happen quickly, people will jump ship. It's just, it's really a symptom of the world we live in. But you know what's going to be really interesting, guys? And this data is starting to come out. And Rennie, we may have talked about this last time you were on the show.
You did.
The grass isn't always greener. And you're starting to see a lot of these guys that go into the portal, they don't even get picked up by another school. And a lot of times if they do, it's not your traditional Division I type of school. They're dropping down a level or two. So that's something that's going to be interesting to watch, because these kids, and that's really what they are, they're kids. They need to see that data. And so as time goes on, they'll see that. But that's one thing I wanted to mention. The other thing too is, as a portal guy, it's really, you know, it's really interesting to look at when you come in. So are you eligible for spring ball? Because if you are, now you have a chance to really acclimate into the system. You get to learn the schemes. You know, you're part of it. It's really tough for these guys that, you know, they wind up transferring in the middle of the summer in some instances. And, you know, you're talking about a month on campus where you're trying to learn a new staff. You're trying to learn a new scheme. And that is hard to do. I mean, I think that, you know, like the average fan doesn't realize how hard that is to do, to learn a new scheme in, you know, a month or two. I mean, that's very difficult. So it is. I agree. I mean, there need to be some restrictions. It's just too easy for these kids to pick up and transfer.
Yeah. And as you said, and really it does them a disservice. It really does. And the other thing that, you know, all the coaches I talk to, the interesting dynamic is they know now they have to – they're part of their recruiting department at these colleges. They have to look at the portal. They have to, right? But it's a fine line between, okay, how many players do I take out of the portal and how many young kids do I get from high school? Because you still have to build the foundation of your program, right, with true freshmen, building that culture coming out of high school. So that's what I think these kids think. Well, I had a scholarship at this college. If I go to the portal, I'm automatically going to get one. But that's not the case. So, but I want to tell you guys a story going back to Dave. So I have a daughter plays Division II soccer in South Florida. So she hurt her quad in camp. And she called up to bitch at me, to bitch, not at me, but bitching. And I set her straight. I just ripped her a new one. I said, you didn't do what you needed to do to prepare yourself for training camp. And that's why your quads hurt. So I don't want to hear it. I tell her all the time. I basically have, you know, my daughters, I have one simple rule. Control what you can control, okay? You can control how hard you train for something. You can control how hard or how much you study for a test. You can control your manners, how you're, if you're respectful to a teacher. You can control that stuff. Like I tell her, you can't, if your coach plays you 2 minutes, you can't control that, but you can control your attitude and how hard you play in that 2 minutes. And a perfect example is when she was going there her freshman year, she worked out tremendous amount going into that camp. And she was awesome that first freshman year. And then she got lazy. Entitlement, right? Oh, I was there. I played a lot as a freshman. And then you get to camp. Your legs aren't ready. And you hurt your quad. So, and then she said, oh, Dad, you're old school football. I go, no. It was the right way. And another thing I tell people all the time, and you guys alluded to this, and Dave, you did. It's what you do when no one's watching. That's what separates you, okay? When there's no team around, there's no team activity, there's no cameras, and you're home and you say, I'm going to go run 20 hills, or I'm going to go do an extra 20 sprints, or whatever it is, do the extra when no one's watching you, where you're not going to get a pat on the back, where you know you're doing something to make you better. And I think a lot of the kids in the entitlement world we live in have lost that edge.
No doubt. I thought Matt was going to talk, but yeah, as far as the ones that are not doing the entitlement thing, when you look around with, we were talking about East Carolina, want to come back to East Carolina for a sec. Obviously you see them going to a bowl again. I would take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't get a chance to ask Holt Mailers any questions the way the media days was set up. And of course it was virtual again this year. Next year it won't be virtual. I love that he went to the Manning Passing Academy, right? That had to help him tremendously, I'm guessing. Yes. I'm sure he took a lot from that, learned a lot from it. So I would expect him to have a big year. I really do. We know they're running backs, right? So I think they're going to have a good running back. Offensive line's going to be good. I know they did some tweaks. I mean, you guys know them better than I do. I think they made some tweaks on defense, moved some people around. I think they're going to be aggressive. And again, I think they're going to be hungry because they had a chance to go to the Military Bowl and it kind of got pulled out from under them.
No doubt. And I was going to tell you, there's another reason why you're going to see that something that Matt, Bubba, Kyle, and I think you have too, we've talked about in the past, is that everybody was saying, we need Holton to be Holton. The problem was there was nobody behind Holton for him to be Holton. And so what happened is, you know, they had to be as conservative as possible for him to so if he gets hurt, who do you have, right?
Yeah.
So they didn't run him as much and let him be the athlete that he is to a playmaker. He is a playmaker.
Yeah.
And I know people talk about the accuracy and all that. And that's one thing that Pirate Nation, that I will be critical of the fan base, is it was so bad running last year. I probably wish I would have lived in, we could switch places and I would be in the world hanging out. But they were like saying the only reason he was playing is because he was a local kid and his dad was the PA announcer. It was so ridiculous. Well, the reality is, here's the deal. You have a kid like Mason Garcia, Rennie. I'm really impressed with this kid. He had trouble his freshman year of high school academically. This is a kid who, thank God we had Holt Nailers, because
yeah,
kid comes in, he straightens out his academics towards the end of high school, and then he had to work on the college, you know, level of, you know, academics. The other thing is with Mason, there was no question that he had the athletic ability. He didn't know the playbook, and to be fair to him, he was, you know, new to the system. So it took time for him to develop. But if you saw him in the spring game, then you saw that the kid has come a long ways. And I'm not the experts like you are with football. Like, I have the eyes enough to see the development. You guys probably could break it down even more. But anyway, the it looks like for us right now that what I was getting at is Mason will be not starting, but playing more this year. And Rennie, by the way, guess where he makes his debut next year? Next year, Labor Day 2023, Mason Garcia makes his debut as a starting quarterback in the Big House. So big shoes to fill there for sure. But the offensive line is going to be better. Holton Ahlers will be better because of that. But also the fact that we have Mason Garcia that's much improved. The defense is going to be much better too as well.
All right, I only heard like a second of it because, of course, technology, I lost everything. But I'll just figure out. Listen, I love Holton Ahlers. And, again, the fans can be just brutal sometimes, right? That's that passion we talked about. But he's very mature. I do think his accuracy is going to be a lot better. But the fact that you can have some younger quarterbacks coming up under him will pay dividends. And, again, I think this is – year four under Mike Houston, they're going to surprise. I don't want to say surprise a lot of teams because everybody they play knows this is a talented team, and they're going to get their best.
No doubt. And we've got, speaking of talented, Bubba, we have a video we want to show you, Rennie.
All right, let's see it.
Yeah, we do, Dave. Yeah,
this is great.
Yeah.
You play defense in offense? Was your dad watching that? Dad.
Oh, man. You guys are great. You guys are great. How about that? How about that? You like that little celebration?
I like it. It looks like almost like Superman there.
Yeah, I think my dad smacked me in the face when I got home that day.
Matt, I love the athleticism there. That's big time.
Oh yeah. I think I pulled a hamstring just watching it.
Yeah, but you got in the end zone, so that's fine.
Hey, now, Matt, only if you'd have had the opportunity to do that at Neyland Stadium against Peyton Manning.
If only, Bubba. What could have been, my friend? What could have been?
Hey, and Matt, you actually played, Rennie. Matt played some big-time stadiums when you look at his career, including the 96 win over Miami and the Orange Bowl, 31-6, right?
Yeah, that's one of the great memories I have, Rennie. I mean, we played on a Thursday night ESPN game. It was on the Deuce back in the day against Southern Mississippi, and we got pounded. I think it was like 28-7 maybe. And so the following week, we were playing at the Orange Bowl against Miami. Nobody in the country gave us a shot. And I want to say this was, 96? And we went down there and just literally just tore them apart. And that was a game where, we could have actually run it up more. I think the final score was, 31-6, right? Right, Dave?
Yeah.
And so that was a great East Carolina team I was fortunate to be a part of, but – talk about a fun memory, because one of the things that made it so special is nobody in the country gave us a shot.
Yeah.
So, and that's what's so cool about it. When the whole world is against you and you can get it done. So that's a good memory.
I tell people all the time, I mean, that is 50 years old. You get to 50 and you just start looking back. I mean, it's about the memories. It really is. And I still talk to my former teammates. I know you probably do too as well, Matt. It's just the memories are so good. And for you to be able to play in those great stadiums like that, oh, my God. The memories just must be flooding, especially when you see them on TV now and you see Neyland Stadium and stuff. And you're like, yep, I played in there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's great.
Yeah, as far as the playoff goes, I'm just praying one day I get my wish. Rennie, I know that you called with the FCS having this is what drives me nuts with the 16 that they have. I know with the FCS, there's no reason why we can't have. I've said all along, and I'm going to keep beating that drum, that we should have the top 10, every single conference champion gets in and six at large, and you can rank them however the heck you want to rank them. I don't care, but I really believe that 16 gives you more content. 16 gets you more teams. And they don't, what it is that the big conferences like the SEC, they don't want Alabama that one special year to get upset by, say, a team from the Sun Belt. They would be like, oh my God. But that's what makes March Madness so great, is to see those upsets. So let's go for the team that's being upset.
So there's a couple things at play. One, it's getting expanded for sure. That's 100%. So don't worry about that. Now, will it expand before the contract ends in 2026? That's the million-dollar question. But it's getting expanded. Mark my words, 100%, it's going. You mentioned 12 or 16. I think it's going to be 12. The reason why I think it's going to be 12 is 16. So there's that fine line, guys, right? Because they don't – we still love the bowl games, right? So we still want to have bowl games, right, for teams that aren't in it. 12 is better than 16 for the bowl games, right? So that's another part of it why I think it's going to be 12. And then the third part, which is probably maybe the most powerful part, is the tradition and the pride – and pageantry of the Rose Bowl, okay? And I think the Rose Bowl found out this year with UCLA and USC now going to the Big Ten that the world of college football is just, it's just different moving forward, okay? So I think, you know, the Rose Bowl, it's just, the parade means so much to them and everything means so much to them. So, I mean, if I'm a betting man, I think the Rose Bowl stays, but I think the Rose Bowl will be, let's say it goes to 12 teams, will be a permanent, probably a quarterfinal matchup, and then in the rotation to get the semifinal and championship. It'll be in that rotation. So they're always going to get really, really good games. I think ultimately that's what will be happening. But there's a lot of things in play that I just mentioned. All those dominoes will drop. They'll figure it out, and it's gonna expand. I think 12 is the number. Now, it could be 16, but I think 12 is the number. And when will it happen is the other question. How quick?
Is that also the fact that if you have 12, you could have the top four get a bye? Is what I'm thinking the first week.
I don't think. Well, does it work? It works out though if they all play, right? So I don't know. There's a few ways you can do it for sure. There's talk about playing that first round game at the higher seeds home stadium, which I'm sure ADs wouldn't be against that, because that's another home gate, you know. I just think 12 is the right number in terms of, I just love, you know, you go with the top six ranked conference champions, right? I think that's a no-brainer. And I just, to me, guys, I think if you put more of an emphasis on a conference championship, oh my God, how great is November going to be, right? To be able to play yourself into the playoff, to me, that's phenomenal. And then you still have six at-larges, right? So you still, you know, everybody's at the table if you do that. It gives the group of five a chance to get in. I just think, to me, it's a no-brainer. We're going to have great matchups, great content. So, I mean, it's going to happen. It's just, okay, is it going to be 12 or 16? I think it's going to be 12. But we'll see. What do I know? I mean, I'm not in the know. It's just my thought.
That sounds good. I tell you what, anything would be better than, you know, everybody said that about the BCS and we had the four, but it's been basically what I call the playoff runny. If you haven't heard me say, it's a made for TV event. I'm not saying the four teams that are in it are not worthy of being in it, but you know, let it be decided on the field. As far as the, like exactly what you're talking about. And would you say that would you say that we would obviously have the Power Five? So would that be like an American would be, as Mike Oresco says, a P6? Would they be the top, or maybe it's the Sun Belt?
Well, yeah. Well, because remember, if you did, because that proposal was made a year or so ago, if you do the top six ranked conference champions, you're not delineating between, and it's really, you know, Mike Oresco goes, it's nuts, and you know, I know Commissioner Oresco pretty well. It's Autonomous Five is the official name. Power Five and Group of Five was just made up. It's actually Autonomous Five and Non-Autonomous Five. If you do the top six conference champions, remember, if you go back a couple of years ago, granted it was the COVID year, but the American and Sun Belt would have been in those top six. They both would have been in there. So I love the fact that just forget what conference they're from. It gives I mean, it gives the MAC, it gives Conference USA. I mean, it gives you a chance, right? It gives you a chance. You know, I think Cincinnati making it last year, I think we all agree that was just kind of, that was an outlier that that happened. The system is not set up for a group of five team to make it. It just isn't. I mean, the stars have to align. I mean, listen, UCF a few years back, really, and if you're a Cincinnati fan, you need to thank UCF because I think they kind of really started pushing, beating the drum for the group of five because they had a couple teams in 17-8 that were phenomenal that deserved the chance to get in. Again, deserving is not in, in the verbiage. It's the top four teams. That's what gets in. It has nothing to do with deserving. You got to always remember that. But I just think it, it makes it better, the system better. When you start week one, you know more teams have a chance to win the national championship. Because it's my opinion, at the end of the day, if they don't expand, and they're gonna, if they don't, and the group of five doesn't have a legitimate chance to get in, and I'm not saying they're gonna win it, because at the end of the day, Dave, you know, maybe Alabama's and the Georgias and the Ohio States, they still run the table and win it. Okay, but at least give some other teams a chance. Because if right. you don't give them a chance, then they got to break off and do their own playoff. I mean, because what the heck are they doing, right?
Yeah, and also it gives a fan, like I said, the with March Madness, the reason it's called March Madness is that, hey, the Blue Bloods don't always win. And I told my son, right. not the best team doesn't always win. And that's okay because you have to play. That's why you play the games. And you, the thrill of victory, the agony of the defeat, like Jim McKay would say, the Wide World of Sports on ABC, right?
And we, and it inevitably, if it was 12 teams and one played 12, you know, to open it up, yeah, one's probably going to blow them out and beat them the majority of the time. But, you know, there was a long time where the one always beat the 16 in basketball. And all of a sudden, the 16's knocked off the one a few times now. So it's sports. That's why they play the games. Inevitably, there's going to be upsets. And I just, can you imagine the playoff with 12 teams? You put them at these great bowl sites, right? You still have your other ancillary bowls for teams that go 6-6, 7-5, the 8-4s. So you're still going to get that, the bowl season that we love. But, man, the matchups in a playoff like that, yes, the kids are going to have to play a few extra games. We realize that. But you mentioned it earlier, Dave. FCS does it. I remember a few years ago I did Youngstown State, who didn't get a bye. So they played from the beginning, and they played on the road the whole way through. Knocked off Eastern Washington that year. I called that game, went to the championship game, ultimately lost to North Dakota State, I believe. But they ended up playing, I want to say, 16 games that year. You know, so, yeah, it can be tough, but they're going to get it done. And now they're making money. So they probably want to play more.
Yeah, and that's what's so funny about it, Rennie. You know, like, it's interesting. Now that this has become such a business, right, and you see – you know, SMU last week, it was announced that they're going to pay their football and basketball players $36,000 a year.
Wow.
You know, to play.
Well, the collective is Matt, the school isn't, the collective. So
correct. Like correct. That's a good distinction. But it really is interesting. And then you have the NCAA, they'll come back and say, well, you know, these are student athletes. And I always kind of crack up about that one, but this has just become such a business. And, you know, if you have to play an extra game, I agree with you. I mean, it's going to have to be done.
So Jim Harbaugh said this the other day. I didn't hear it, but it came up at the seminar. And listen, I think we're going this way, guys. I mean, there's a lot of I's that need to be dotted, a lot of T's need to be crossed. But he was like, the TV money is it's so high, right? Because that's what's driving this, right? I mean, you guys haven't even asked me about Fox, CBS, and NBC signing the Big Ten 7 years, $7 billion. And Jim Harbaugh said, hey, let's just take 10% of that money off the top, right? So in that case, it would be, you know, whatever. $100 million or whatever, a mass off, $70 million, whatever it is, or $700 million, and pay the players and break it down. If you're a scholarship player, the math at your conference, you're going to get paid $48,000 a year and just pay everybody. Now, the issue with that is now do they become employers of the school? They obviously do. You got workers' comp, you got unionization. So there is a lot of obstacles to run through, jump through. I get that, but something needs to be done. it'd be nice if we had a governing body that really, you know, could get in there. And we heard this week where they said the power schools were thinking of really getting their own governing body, right? The NCAA still has its purpose, guys. At the end of the day, the power, you know, all the FBS schools, the 131 schools, that's just a small portion, right? Because the NCAA, everyone bangs on the NCAA, and I do it from time to time. They do a really good job with the NCAA championships at FCS and Division II and Division III and the Olympic sports. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I just think the money has gotten so out of whack in college football that they're, like, overwhelmed now, right? And now with NIL. So the smart people are going to have to get into a room and figure it out, because guess what? The money's not going to get any lower. It's just going to get higher. And I'm assuming since this deal is now done, the SEC deal with ESPN was done before Oklahoma and Texas. So I'm assuming that deal will get opened up and their money will get bigger as well. So I don't know. Fascinating times we live in.
Yeah, I was talking to the guys about I was talking earlier with Harry that was on from ODU. But I'm a huge streamer. I love streaming. And if you could take your pick, do you have a preference of one? But if I'm Apple, Amazon, I'm throwing everything in the – I think those two are the ones that – the two suitors outside of – obviously, I love ESPN Plus. I'm not Plus, but I'm saying outside of ESPN Plus, what streaming service would you like if you had a choice? And
well, but here's the thing, Dave. You hit on this, and you talked to your guest, Harry, about this as well. Like, you were talking about Conference USA, right? And so – when you go to a streaming service, and I know that Facebook Live and stuff, when you go to a streaming service, you can kind of just get lost in oblivion, right? Unless someone is specifically searching for that game. And I heard his comment where he said he logged on and it said 6,000 people were watching him. And he's right. I mean, you can go to any, you know, decent ESPN Plus game, and you're going to have 80, 90, 100,000 people viewing it for a non-Power 5 game. Here's going to be the fascinating thing that I'll sit back and watch. So I think Amazon and Apple, they've already showed they want to get into the sports world, right? There was a report, I don't know if it's true, that they actually offered more money to get that piece of the Big Ten than NBC and CBS did. But, you know, Big Ten figured, well, we're not, but it's all streaming. You lose linear. See, and I think that's the issue. I think these conferences, they want their cake and eat it too, and I agree with them. So that's why, and granted, I work for ESPN, but, you know, when you get a contract with an ESPN, you get the linear side. You're going to be on TV, but you still have the streaming to go along with it, which is really strong, I think, for these conferences. So believe me, I'm sure Apple and Amazon are going to throw a ton of money at the Big 12 when their contract's up in a couple of years, and probably the Pac-12 when their contract's up, I believe, next year. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. And, of course, with ESPN losing – I shouldn't say losing the Big 10, just opting to stay away because the money was just nuts. I think they keep a nice little pile, right, to be able to go after and keep a Big 12 and keep a Pac-12. So – it'll be good. ESPN's in a real good position, you know, if you think about it. I mean, yeah, the Big Ten is a huge entity. We can agree on that. But so is the SEC, and ESPN has will have all the SEC inventory. They have all the ACC inventory. They have all the American inventory. They have all the Sun Belt inventory. And they have all the MAC inventory. So still a lot good there. They share rights with they have a portion of the Big 12 going forward and still a portion of the Pac-12. So they'll be right in there to take those rights. But you're right. I mean, Amazon and Apple, they're going to throw a ton of money. So if you're the conference, is it all about the money, or is it maybe I'll take a little less and I can get streaming and linear? I don't think those big conferences want to lose linear. That's for sure. But I don't know. Who knows? Money talks.
Just don't do Facebook or Stadium. Conference USA is definitely – the textbook definition.
Well, even so, like, so UMass, where I went to school, my alma mater, they used a streaming service last year. And for
was
like
it Flow?
It was Flow. Thank you. It was Flow. And their fans just were not happy with the product. So UMass being an independent, they're not in a conference. They just signed a contract today. Their games will be on ESPN+, which is tremendous for a school like that. It's just easier for the fans to get to it. So yeah, their fan base was really excited about that.
Much better. That's a lot better than Flo. No offense, Flo, but
yeah, hey, listen, Flo does the best they can do, but at the end of the day, there's limitations. And you know, ESPN Plus, all the streaming services now are such where it's so good, and with the smart TVs, you know, when I started with ESPN in 2010, and it was ESPN 3 back then. I mean, it was tough. You know, the stream froze up, and you're trying to, you know, hook your laptop up to your TV, and now you don't have to do that stuff. I mean, the quality is so good. It is really, when you stream a game on ESPN, I can tell you, it is no different. You guys know this because you do both. It's no different watching that game to watching a game on linear TV. The difference is, okay, who are the announcers, right? Because most of the streaming now on ESPN Plus, when you get schools and conferences, some of those games now, the talent, the announcers will be hired by the school themselves. It's someone local because it saves money. You might not get a national announcer, but you're going to probably get someone you know and does a really good job.
No doubt, it's really good, and can't wait for that. Rennie, before we let you go, obviously, thank you again for coming on, and it's really hard to when you, it's like we could talk several hours, but we know you have a life and you're tired from the early morning flight. I'm glad you made it home safely back with Mickey and hanging out with him there at Disney. And Matt, did you have anything before we go?
Yeah, no, it's always awesome having Rennie on, man. You're such a great guest, always so generous with your time, so we appreciate it. Absolutely, and hope you have a great season, and you know, I'm sure we'll have you back, you know, whenever you can make it. We'd love to have you.
Pleasure, guys. I love chatting with you anytime. Just give me a heads up. I'll be here.
All right. Thanks, man. Hope you have a great night. And
thanks, guys.
How can people follow you real quick? How can people
You see how goofy my name is, but yeah, just at Twitter, Rini Ngoli. And I just found out something here. Like, Twitter in the social media world is actually really small. It's all Instagram and TikTok now, but I am not going to be on Instagram and TikTok. I'm just not. Twitter's enough for me. I also have a Facebook page. That's my name. So you can find me there. And then, yeah, I'll just, majority of my games probably ESPNU, some ESPN2 this year. So yeah, just, you know, scan your channels. You'll find me somewhere.
All right. Have a good night, my friend.
All right, guys. I'll see you.
All right. Take care, Rennie.
Bye. See you guys.
Appreciate Rennie so much for coming on, guys. A lot of fun, and, been a long night, but certainly great to have him on. We didn't want to rush through him with him, no doubt. Do you guys have anything before we go?
No, man. Again, just he's, you know, Rennie's always a great guest. It's fun having him on, and always a lot of good content there. So, you know, happy to have him.
No doubt. And Bubba, thank you so much. Pulling hard. Let me say real quick, we're pulling really hard for Kyle from LaGrange Team Kyle. He's been under the weather, so we're thinking about him. And keep your thoughts and prayers certainly for him. And we were hoping he would make it on tonight, but certainly we'll have him back on very, very soon on the injured list. But I know that he'll be certainly a player with us again, no doubt. We'll have him on hopefully sooner than later. Thanks to our great guests tonight, Harry and Rennie. Bubba, thank you so much for your hard work behind the scenes producing tonight, and obviously one of the co-hosts as well. Appreciate you, buddy, very much. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. And as always, go Pirates. Why not copy that? Everybody gonna see us go bananas. Speed that, baby, don't hold back. Every foot, every yard, every first down, every touchdown with the cannons blast. Get it on, get it all, get the wave going like a hurricane, y'all.